preacher in Jesus' name. I'm not used to cordless mics, as you can tell. I was asked to preach a message at Providence a couple weeks ago that I had preached at Elm Street a number of years ago, and I didn't really think I was going to preach it here again, but it was one of those messages that put me back in time, and I remembered some of the circumstances that inspired me as I was studying it back in the day, and I realized that family life moves on, a new generation of parents comes on the scene, and I remember how I wish to have known some of these things. It would have been nice to understand some of these things maybe a little earlier in my parenting. So some of you heard this message before, and I apologize somewhat for that, and yet meeting the emotional needs of our children, is the title, is something that each new parent is in the process of doing, and I like to think about that this morning. As parents, we have a goal, and I like the way Dr. Charles Stanley said, our ultimate goal is to produce responsible adults who are able to function independently of parents' authority, yet wholly submitted to God. Independent of parents, but wholly submitted to God. That's our mission. We are trying to prepare our children not to be codependent on us, but to be dependent on God and to go into life doing whatever God has for them. And we're developing our children emotionally to get ready for that big step. We're not trying to position ourselves as a perpetual mentor for the rest of their life. We want to be in their life, but we don't want to be a perpetual mentor. And there's lots of things we do as young parents. As we think of that goal, we try to do the right things. We try and find the right church for them, the right school, try and get them in the right social status, try and make sure we're financially get it right. And if we're not careful and trying to get all these other things right in our homes, we can miss some real opportunities, real foundational things. And our children's emotional fortitude or lack thereof is made up by temperament and genetics to a degree. We understand that each child is different. But much of our children's means and methods of processing life are caught and taught early in childhood and adolescence. Much of it is. I'm just, for better or for worse, awestruck at how much our children reflect back. Well, in our home, it was this way. And you get married, you start making those discussions. How we did it impacts so much how the next home is going to do it or how they're going to merge. What we do right sticks. What we do wrong impacts. You've heard me say already the hunting dog who was shot with a gun. It's going to be hard to build trust in that dog again. Even though he enjoyed hunting, he might go under the porch when he sees you coming with a gun because of how hurt he got in life at one point in time. Two foundational principles in understanding emotional development in our children, I believe, is number one, we have to keep in mind that they are not Christians until they are. They're not Christians until they are. We are responsible to sort of play a God role in their life. We're responsible when their conscience is feeling guilty to make amends, to make acknowledgement, to do what it takes, discipline, whatever it takes to get that conscience free again. We are taking on a God role early in their life. And number two, we have to keep in mind that spirituality, even as they move into becoming spiritually awakened and alert to the things of God, spirituality is not the absence of feelings. It's not the absence of feelings. We don't turn into some superhuman Christian just because of a experience. There's a development that goes on. And to teach our children to internalize all emotion is not a good footing for them for life. It's not a good footing. We are a people that tries hard to teach our children a lot of good things that they need for life, like self-control, how to be brave, how to not be crybabies, lots of things, good things we teach them, how to eat a balanced diet, lots of things that are wonderful that we try and teach our children very carefully. But if we're not careful in all of that, we can maybe end up teaching our children how to keep emotion inside, how to pen up their feelings. They learn to close out pain. They learn that you don't talk about these things or it's going to bring more pain into their life. So I have four legs and a stool drawn here this morning. I have a stool. This is a four-legged stool. We could have a three-legged stool and still have a fair amount of stability, but a four-legged stool is better. But you take one of these legs off of this stool, and you will have a tippy situation. I remember somebody, I forget who it was, they were at a cabin, and they had a coffee table, and one of the legs was defective, and one of their children stepped on it at the wrong place, and the thing flew up, hit them in the face. I forget if they ended up going to the hospital, what happened. But one leg in the stool was not in position. So I like to put four legs on this stool. The first one I want to put is belonging. Belonging. The next one I want to put is worthiness. The next one, competence. And the next one is boundaries. All right, so we have a stool that has four legs now, and we want to try and get those legs stabilized in our children's lives. Now you say, what do you mean by all this? Well, belonging means unconditional attachment. Whether biologically or non-biologically, our children need to know that they're in a safe place and they belong. They belong. There's lots of places where our children will go in life where their ability to be there or get there depends on things. It depends on their personality. Maybe it depends on their charisma, whether they can get into that social circle. Or maybe on the job, it depends on their performance. If they just can't do it good enough, they will lose their job. It's an understood thing that they face. But in the home, the children that God blessed us with, there needs to be a belonging, unconditional attachment. It doesn't matter if they're good at this or bad at this, and their sibling is good at this or bad, they have a place in our home. They belong. Worthiness. We all thrive on bringing value to the unit that we live in, whatever that unit is. I understand, I'm not quite there yet, but I understand retirement. Sometimes that's a difficult adjustment because you start questioning what is your real value here. But we need to help children find their natural value and bless our home with the skills that they have, whatever they may be, and be a contributing member. And maybe for a little boy, unexpectedly, he enjoys a kitchen, and that's a place where he finds value. And maybe a girl will find some value in things that unexpected, but they enjoy it. They feel worthy. They feel worthiness when they're doing it, when they're helping you. Competence. That is saying to our child, maybe you can. Maybe you can. Now, there are some children just move forward and try anything and everything and fall flat in their face. We maybe don't have to instill competence in them as much, but there are others that we need to just keep saying, maybe you can. Because God has something big He wants them to do, and they might not feel up to the task, but they need parents that help them along the way to try things. Maybe try it two times. Maybe try it three times. I remember the time that my dad, I felt like a total failure. I tried leading songs at prayer meeting, and two things flopped that night on the same evening. I remember on the way home saying, I am not a song leader. And I remember my dad just saying to me, you're going to try again. And I'm glad he did. I'm glad that he inspired that confidence in me Because I actually enjoy it now. I didn't know at that point in time that I would or could, but I actually do. I actually miss it. But I had a parent that did the right thing at the right moment that inspired confidence. The other one is boundaries. There are places you can't go and limits to places you can. Boundaries. Just in our home, this is how it is. This is a boundary. Now, I think one of the reasons that God made it that opposites attract is because opposites fill the missing attributes in home life. They bring balance to each other in so many ways. We talk about it at weddings, how this is usually a unique dynamic in couples that you wonder what all attracted them to each other. But, you know, we notice how they bless each other. And that carries through in how we handle our children. Maybe one will tend to not enough boundaries. Maybe one will tend to too many boundaries. Maybe one tend to be overly protective. The other tend to just press freedoms into the lap and just let them go. Yeah, they'll be all right, fine. But it's as we parents, as we work together behind the scenes to strike a balance that is for the good of our child, it's then that we create a good foundation for them emotionally to move forward on. But when we as parents refuse to merge our ideals or our beliefs about, we refuse to merge that, we create a time bomb in the emotional fabric of our children. We will end up maybe arguing about them in front of them. No, I don't think he's ready. No. Work that out behind the scenes. Work that out behind the scenes. One of the most basic needs in helping our children emotionally is that father and mother work together with respect to each other's values and temperament rather than oppose each other. Well, there are times we will feel like the spouse is doing it wrong. We just feel like this is not going to work out well. We need to somehow switch course on this. But when we agree on a platform, we accept it and we work in harmony. We come to some sort of platform we can agree on. And I believe there are times when, if we disagree, we just move forward on whatever we can agree on, and we talk about it some more behind the scenes, maybe change it for the next time. But we want to make sure that we're creating a oneness in how we handle our children's needs. All right. In helping develop our children emotionally, I think the most important thing for our home is that we mirror God's attributes to them. I say we're sort of playing a God role. We're playing a God role in how we represent and bring God into their life. You think about the things. What brings you emotional security? What brings you security? As God has called you to things that are bigger than yourself in life, what brings you security to go there? Well, one of the things that brings me security is I know that God will be there. If he asks me to go, he will be there with me. That's one of the things that has brought security, much security in my life. My first one I have is be there at critical times in their life. Be there at critical times in their life. Be there for them. Not doing everything, but be there for them. One of the things as adults that gives us security is the fact that we know our God will be with us. We know he will be there. We know in any distress we can call out to him. And we can look at this big test that's ahead and we can say, am I up to this? Am I able? And we cringe and we fear and we, but then we think about it. You know, God has always been there for me. And he will this time too. And then we get courage. And then we can rest. Our children need that same security. I think it should be very seldom that our children come home from school to a note on the table in an empty house and mom and dad are just out about and they'll be okay, but you won't be okay until I get home. Well, there can be those rare occasions. I'm not saying it can't never happen if you have old enough children in the household, but I think it should be very rare. It should be very rare that happens. I think our children need the security of knowing that we are there. We are there. They live in our house and we are there for them. I remember what my wife's uncle said at the passing away of his mother. One of the things he remembered about his mother is she was always there. She just always was there. He said she didn't accomplish much by way of tea parties and women's group and workplace assistance, and she wasn't big in that way, but he said she was always there. Mom was around. Mom was around, and she raised a family that is serving the Lord in lots of places all over the world, mission fields. And I think we need to keep that in mind, parents. There's lots of mission opportunities, and it's such a delicate balancing act, but we're raising missionaries. We're raising people to serve God in some fashion. We're raising school teachers. And we can't be everything to everybody all the time. We live in a world where outreach is emphasized. We live in a world where there's a whirlwind of activity. And there's social life, piano lessons, committee meetings, and all these things. We have to try and figure it all out. But let's not forget our children's emotional security in the process. Now, the second one I have is get down on their level to build relationships when they're small. Now, having raised 5 girls, I got tired of playing dolly. I will confess that this morning. It just wasn't my favorite thing to play. I put something on the stool here, and that is rungs that connect these 4 legs. A good stable stool has something down underneath it that connects the legs together. And I think if we're not careful, we can think this is what is the most important in our home, and we try and accomplish all these other things without relationships. And I like to call this one relationships. I like to call those rungs relationships. It's the things that we do that are age appropriate and down on their level that make them say, I like my mom, I like my dad, I like them. One salesman said he vividly remembers pulling in a farmer's lane to find a big farm tractor backed up to a little boy's pedal tractor, and there was some kind of rope or something tied between the two. And the dad looked like, you caught me. He had that look on his face. But to the salesman, that was a precious moment, because that little boy, how many have dads that would stop what they're doing and actually take a little bit of time out of their day to enter into their play and enter into their level? That incident, I believe, did a lot for that little lad. And we can win our 4-year-old's heart by playing memory and go fishing on the floor. As they turn into teenagers, it might take something a little bit bigger and grander to make the day. I remember when my son was around 12 or 13, he was looking at the newspaper, and he saw that the auction was down there at Shenny, the lawn and garden thing. And he said, Dad, may I put it on your calendar? Small engines is just not my forte or anything, but I said, yes, you can put it on the calendar. I don't remember if we did or did not go, but he put it on the calendar. Remember that. At least I knew he wanted to go. But we have to watch what makes our children, watch what makes them tick, and try and enter into their world. As parent, I find for me, I can get so absorbed into thinking they can enter into my world. You know, we have this thing, we're trying to make a living, and life is just so busy, and you want to make ends meet, we'll just do this. We'll bring them into our world in this way, bring them into our world in this way. But some children, our world and their world is pretty different, and some parents don't take time to try and enter into their world. It's nice when our children have the same interests as us, and we can just take them along, and they're having a good time, and they're feeling that relationship is being established. That's nice. But we may have some children that is not the case. And it will take us stepping out of our comfort zone pretty far till they feel like dad's putting, or mom's putting rungs on this ladder. This is, I like my mom. I like my dad. The child therapists say that the biggest windows of time for parents to bond with their children is early morning or after 9 o'clock. And I think most of us parents know that early morning is when we like to get our day going, and after 9 o'clock is when we like to get our day stopped. And that has been a problem all my life. Children want bedtime stories. They want another story from dad. I just get in bed. I'm tired. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge. But that's the time that they're the most open to establishing relationship. During the day, they have school. They have other clutter in their lives. And we have to... Boundaries is all part of that, but Another thing, our culture is geared more and more toward a work/quality time segregation and in family and raising children. You have your work and you have your quality time. You know, you plan, like Jeff said in Sunday school, you plan that big vacation and you just pack everything into that big vacation, and vacations are fine. I think families need that. But I think we need to be careful that we don't separate this too hard, because in children's minds, that's not all separate. And what about what we do with what we call quality time with our family? What are we doing during that quality time? It bothers me when I can hear a family talk about a good time they had at the cabin, but the dad was mostly in the tree stand with binoculars and the children, they were just running around playing tractor in the house or whatever, but it was quality time. I guess I don't understand quite the definition of quality. Is quality time going and doing what you want to do at the cabin, but just glad that your family's there? Or is quality time doing things together as a family and you're interacting with them? What really is quality time? Generations ago, fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, they had lots of time doing tasks that didn't have the noise of engines and electric motors and things buzzing around them. And there was lots of opportunity for interaction. Those times, I feel, are less. We have to maybe work a little harder to get those times where we really have a relaxed time, where you can get in discussions that go a bit deeper than the surface things. And then we have these cell phones now with texts and chats. And, well, we heard a message on that last Sunday night. I won't go there. Number three, be an example. Be an example. Passing on emotional stability to our children entails an example. If we're going to try and tell them to do things that we're not accomplishing in other ways in our life, we're going to have a lot of question marks and a lot of instability and add a lot of instability to their life. Deuteronomy chapter 6, for the sake of time, I'm not going to have you turn, but it says, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart." We are being watched as parents. The things we model by design or by accident powerfully communicate our convictions, whether right or wrong, acceptable or unacceptable. If we wish for our sons and daughters to accept the idea that there are absolute standards of right and wrong, we must let them see that we believe it ourselves. Let them see that we believe it. I had a youth. I remember, I think it was at Bible school, youth of a son, very brilliant father, deacon in the church. But he was just, I think I can use the word angry at his father. He said, "The way my father handles the cattle is not right." He saw his father beat up in cattle and he said, "It is not right." One writer made this honest confession, and now I'll read it pretty much verbatim. Unfortunately, it's a confession that I could understand very well. He says, "I was rather perturbed when my children learned to read, because it meant that they could compare the speed on my speedometer to the speed limit signs by the side of the road. I tried to confuse them. I tried to distract them. I tried to shield their view with my body, but they seemed to make a perverse pleasure in catching me going 70 in a 55 mile per hour zone. And you know what? I began to justify what I was doing. Well, Aaron, I'd say, Daddy's in a little hurry, so he has to go a little faster right now. Well, Aubrey, I'd explain, the people who put those signs up understand that people are going to go a little fast, so they've purposely made the speed limit lower than it has to be. And the whole time, while I was trying to tell my children to obey rules and to respect authority, I was teaching them the exact opposite by my example. I was teaching them to break rules and to flaunt authority. Outside of prayer, the most important thing we can do for our children is to be a good example. They are observant. That's how they learn. They learn by watching, and as a result of that, they imitate. Whatever we do, they tend to do." And as Christians, that should be all good, shouldn't it? We buy them toys so they can imitate our behavior. We have kitchen sets and baby dolls and cars and lawnmowers and toy grills. And it's just interesting for me to get in people's homes over revivals and things just to hear the children playing. Children play different. They do. They play what they understand, what they see. The problem occurs when they imitate the behaviors we would rather that they do not imitate. If we want good manners socially or around the table, guess where it starts? So many things children's is in children's lives is caught by example. Well, this is not on child training necessarily, but number four. Acceptance regardless of aptitude. Acceptance regardless of aptitude. Parents, can you look every one of your children in the eye and say, I'm proud of you, in the right sense of the word proud. I'm glad you're my child. We accept them as God's gift to us. God made them just the way they are. They may be very, very, very different than us, but He made them just the way they are. Can we assure them that we're going to cheer them on into whatever they decide to pursue for the Lord? Now, I know in normal parenting, there will be times when we're more proud than others. We're more glad to say they have our last name than some other times in their life. Children make mistakes. Children have a way of challenging our reputation on occasion. But which one of us adults believes this morning that we are God's favorite? Or which one of us adults this morning believes that God didn't like us as good as the person on our left or the person on our right? I hope we don't believe either of those. God created each of us in unique ways for unique purposes. And He did the same for our children. And He is giving us what we need as we go through life in all our uniqueness. He is giving to us what we need to make it. To be tall for Him. Or small for Him, whatever it is. Physical touch is a great part of a child's life. They understand acceptance. Mark chapter 9, 36 and 37, Jesus, even busy Jesus, took time to take a little child and set him in the midst and take him in his arms. And he said, whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but him that sent me. Taking children and giving them acceptance, we're accepting God. We're accepting God, God's gift to us. Children need the snuggle of a mother at times, and they need the kiss of a daddy and a mother. Maybe they need a little bit of the toughness and the roughness of a daddy at times and the gentleness of a mother. You know, God just made the home such a beautiful thing to bring into child's life all the aspects of what they need. But you know what the biggest belief systems that children carry over into adolescence and adulthood that come out many times later in their youth? I am worthless. I am not important. I am a failure. I am a mistake. I'm incompetent. I'm powerless. I'm a hopeless case. For acceptance, I must make others happy. I must bury my feelings. I must never share my heart. I must always be blamed. I must not make any commitments. I must be overly responsible. I must keep my distance. I must keep my family secrets. I must not let people close to me. I must never rock the boat. I must never trust. I must never let anyone hurt me again. And usually these feelings come because of feeling compared with siblings, laws in their home that were understood, maybe nonverbal, but understood laws. They observed how siblings were treated and compared to them. And even in the best of homes with differences in gifts, the challenge is on for us as parents to love each one the same, each the same, and show it in a way that they understand it, that they know we mean it. Victory drill will be easy for the one, but hard for the next. That's okay. That's okay. We're happy to be spending this time with you getting it right. We know it went faster for your brother or your sister. We communicate that, and we let them know that regardless of aptitude, we love them, and we're glad they're in our home. Probably in the best of homes, some children tend to struggle with some of these emotions. If we want to create a safe emotional balance, we must do our best to stimulate belonging and worthiness and competence in each child with all their different strengths and weaknesses. Love them for who they are. Number 5, let them do an imperfect job. Let them do an imperfect job. It's part of their development. Every adult's worth is dependent on their ability to contribute to society. We feel better when we are contributing and our contribution is accepted. We feel better about that. It's what puts value in our day. One of the most demoralizing things in my work is when I feel I try hard and I put hours and hours into something and I show it to the customer and they say, oh, no, that's not what I had in mind. Oh, that's so hard. You know, and we start taking it personal. You can soon start taking it personal. And this can happen in our children's lives. And it's part of dealing with life. It's part of dealing with life. And we need to teach our children how to work through the emotions of just going about day to day. It amazes me how God lets imperfect man run his church. See, how long is the Pilgrim Conference going now? 25, 30 years? What has it been now? You know, we still don't have it figured out. If the Pilgrim Church had God's last name, would he be embarrassed? Or is he pleased? But you know, he's letting man run his church. We can spend so much time trying to get it right. And we can get overwhelmed at times in that process. And at the end of the day, we still might have something that's a bit embarrassing to our Father in heaven. A bit embarrassing. Many times our children will come for help. The project we assigned them went amiss. At first impulse, we look at the mess and we're tempted to say, just go play. Just go outside. I'll take care of this myself. Why did you? Why didn't you? You didn't think farther than your nose is long. You knew what I wanted. You knew what. Or maybe they came beaming. They just finished dusting the room. And they're all expecting to get appreciation shown by mom or dad. I guess in that case, mom. And mom looks around and she sees a big dust curl underneath the table. And that's about all she can see. That's about all she can see. It was the one spot that they missed. What do we do with those moments? Are they going to get praise? Are they going to get criticism? Will they get both? Will they only get one? As parents, we have a twofold mission: to inspire confidence, but to also teach them how to do a task well. And as employers, we love when we can hire children that have been taught to do a job well. But when real young children are involved in big projects, I believe sometimes as parents we're best off when they're not looking to just do a little touch-up. Give them the praise. Give them affirmation. Help them find worthiness in serving you and helping around the house. And when they're not looking, we touch it up a bit and we get them to help us again next week or next month or whatever. But at some point in life, when it's more age appropriate, we expect them to make some adjustments and to hit the corners a little better than they have been. And we draw them in that way. We inspire confidence, but then we help nurture them to get it right, get it better as time goes on. We want them, finally, at the end of the day, we want them to feel confident. We want them to learn to do a good job, that when God hands them the dust cloth instead of us, when God says, I want you to serve on the school board, I want you to go to Shepherd's Fold, I want you to step into school, we want to inspire them enough that they feel like, okay, maybe I can. I don't know how, but maybe I can. Number 6, express appropriate confidence in them at the proper ages. This ties together a bit. Some children are barely able to take on the role of adulthood because they never had parents that raised the bar and said, I know you can jump it. I know you can. As parents, it's our natural tendency to just want to help them raise the bar and help them jump across and or lift them across. They don't even have to jump. We'll lift them across before they even had a chance to try jumping. Never even flex their own muscle. I just think as parents, especially when it comes to this side of the house, when we have boys, we want to inspire them in ways as they're growing up so that when they come of age, they have the courage to go face that employer about a job. They have learned enough of social graces. We had enough of communication. We had enough of relationship that they can feel free to come and say, "Dad, what might he ask me when I go? Or are you going to go with me?" And maybe we'll say, "No, son, I think you can." You know, the next step is they're going to have to go approach some girl's father. They're going to get married. They're going to have courage for other things. And we want to inspire that courage that, yes, you can. This is a little scary. We understand. And maybe we go with them part way, or maybe we go with them all the way. Children are different, and I'm not saying how there's one formula for everyone. But I think the most important thing is as parents that we don't raise our children in such a way that we have this hard fence around us and we don't trust them to step across that fence. We have to let them step across. We have to let them make mistakes. We have to let them, but we have to have a relationship established that they know where to come back to when this didn't quite work out as planned. Not sure if I'm clear on that or not, but safe parenting is a balance of expressing confidence and withholding confidence if that confidence has been betrayed. Accountability is needful, necessary at any age. But I'm just jealous that as we're trying to nurture, and I don't mean to speak derogatory of millennials at all. Each generation has their different characteristics, but I think courage is one that we definitely need to keep instilling in our children to prepare them emotionally for the many big things that they face ahead. Number 7, let them express their emotions in sanctified ways. And this is always the one that scares me a little bit. I hope you can hear me out. I said we teach our children not to talk back. Let's stick to that. We teach our children not to grumble and complain all the time, especially about food and those kind of things. Let's stick to that. But I believe we need to be careful in how we teach these things. Lest we, in trying to teach some of these good foundations, we end up teaching them that it's wrong to say how you feel. And that's the burden. That is a real burden on my heart in all of this. And I didn't get it all right. How do we relate to children that are expressing their feelings? How do we relate to them? It is so important. We serve a God. I said we need to mirror God's attributes in our home. You think about how God relates to you as an adult when you say your likes and dislikes. How does God relate to you in all that? You know, we have these things as we move through life. We don't like that color of car. We don't like that dress material. We say it for whoever's around, whatever they want to take from it. This is me. I don't like that. We express that. We express things to God about how we're feeling and what we're working through and our situation in life. We say it to God. And we serve a God who allows us to do that. He allows us to say how we're feeling. I remember sometimes experiences that I was going through, I felt like I was almost chanting my prayers to God. I was just desperate in my communication with God. As adults, we sometimes get into some difficult discussions and things that don't come out as charitably or as professionally as we'd like. This happens in church life, can happen in the home. We're painstakingly honest about our feelings. And I remember when that happened one time. I don't remember if it was in the back of this church or if it was in a ministry. I don't remember the setting for sure anymore. But I remember when it was one of those moments when people were just being honest. People were being honest about how they felt about this particular situation, whatever it was. And I remember somebody, I don't know who it was, but I remember somebody saying, you know, I, I the way some of this came through here, this is not right. They felt like it's time for some confessions. And I remember one dear old brother. He said, well, I want to say something, brother. He said, I've been in circles where people would not talk. They would not say how they felt. And he said, you can't get anywhere when people don't talk. He said, be thankful you had a group that was willing to share how they were feeling. And I took that with me through life. I took that with me. Be thankful. If your children are explaining how they feel to you, be thankful. Take time for that. You might need that later on in life in a big, huge way that you don't understand. I remember my father-in-law telling me that little people, it's little people's problems. Big people, it gets to be big people's problems. And that's the way it works. And you need to establish this relationship all along. You have to enter into it when they're little so that you're available when they're big and they can feel free to come to you. It's okay if we communicate our likes and dislikes to a point. But it's not okay to let our likes and dislikes govern our conduct. We teach our children to overcome their dislikes, at least temper them for a healthy diet. We teach them that. As parents, in finding the delicate balance of order and balanced diet and no complaining and no talking back to mom and dad, we can, if we are not careful, subtly teach them that you dare not say how you feel, ever. And we want to be careful about that. We want to know what our child's thinking. We want to learn all those things. We want to know that Johnny doesn't like red beets and Sarah doesn't like peas. But finally, Sarah and Johnny have to learn to eat red beets and pea, whatever it is they don't like. They have to learn to do that. And there does come a time that they learn that, okay, we all know you don't like red beets. We all know you don't like peas. You don't have to tell everybody anymore. We all know that. This is the rules at our house. These are the boundaries. Many times David cried out to God and he said how he felt, but he came back to working on God's terms. He came back to working within God's boundaries and allowing God to be God. And God turned those moments into the book of Psalms, into church music, that for generations, to us yet today, we turn to that when we're in our times of grief. That was his honesty with his God that God allowed, and God played it. God played it for church music. God allows us for us to say how we feel. Our children deserve to be understood. It's okay if they don't like weeding the garden. It's okay. But we don't allow that to become something that undermines all the rest of the children that are listening. We bring some boundaries into all that. But we hear them out, and we use that opportunity to say, you know what, I didn't like weeding the garden either. And we use that opportunity to say, my parents had 3 acres of sweet corn, and we use that as times to build a relationship and let them know that there's maybe a different perspective than the one they're seeing. We can condition our children to clam up, or we can teach them how to say how they feel and use that knowledge to build a bridge for communication and to ultimately bring boundaries and stick to it. Eventually, we teach that re-expressing the same dislikes is not acceptable. We need to let them know that we all know that they don't like peas and they don't need to reinforce that at every meal, and we're not going to allow that. But they had a chance. They feel like they're understood. They feel like we know who they are and what their likes and dislikes are or are not. And they need to. Children need to learn to come under obedience, come under submission. It's going to go on into life. Eventually it might be a wife to a husband. Eventually it might be laity to a larger church voice. We need to learn how to present our cases, present our views, and then lay them down and accept the voice that was stronger than ours. Number 8, have boundaries. Have boundaries. I said the voice that's stronger ours, or the authority that God had established. I should maybe say it that way. Have boundaries. Part of the way I show love to a child is by saying no. And part of the way I show love to my child is by saying yes. By teaching them what is important in life. It starts when they are little. Don't childproof your house, young mothers. I said this is not about parenting skills in that regard, but One of the fears of young parents is, do they understand? Oh, they understand. Usually, many times, far more than you want to imagine. You can do little tests. You know, there's tests you can do. Do they know where the comb goes? Do they, you know, are they making association to things that you can tell that they know what's up? But you want to teach them what no means long before they remember the spankings. Formulate clear boundaries. Sometimes you may have to sit by the same flower pot, the same flower arrangement for 15 minutes. Oh, I think you can put some things out of a child's reach. You'll drive yourself, fray your own emotions if you don't. But you leave some things. You leave some things as testing grounds more than in training grounds so that they learn that you're not allowed to touch that. And they learn that just a look from across the room is all it takes, and it's no contest anymore. You want to get to that point, that you can communicate in ways that it becomes no contest, and there's obedience. Because you're trying to train this child in a way that once they get to be teenagers, you want to let them go. You want to let them go. You want to let them go out with other young children, other youth. I mean, you want to... It's part of their development. It's part of what they need. It's part of what they have to learn to do. And we formulate clear boundaries when they're young and keep those boundaries intact and bring stability into their life. Many a child is an emotional wreck because they have learned to live with unpredictable boundaries. They never know which time dad or mom is going to get upset about it. And they keep testing it and, oh, this was the time. Oh, okay, now I got called out. Wow, did I ever get called out for it? And brings a lot of emotional instability. We have two dogs at home, and we had a fence around our house. And that fence is an underground buried fence, and they have a collar on. And that fence got relocated slightly over the years, just a little bit. We realized, okay, we don't want the dogs here, so we adjusted it and put the flags back in. But now that fence has been there for, I'm not sure how long, it has not been changed for quite a long time. And it just dawned on me here some time ago that, you know, the batteries have been dead in those dogs' collars for, I'd like to say, possibly years. They never went outside the fence. There was a boundary established. They just, it's not even beeping. It's not even shocking. It's not doing anything. I should get it off. But they had a clear boundary established that hasn't changed. And they just respect it. That's in the animal world, okay? But a lot of the same does apply. When children have clear boundaries, it brings rest. It just helps them a lot in their personal journey. Number 9, my time is up. But emotions must lovingly be in subjection to truth. Emotions must lovingly be in subjection to truth. And what I mean by this one is, children do have fears. We have these things even as adults. We still need to be checked sometimes. I saw a church sign yesterday. Oh, I forget how it said. Something about worry. It's just your negatives. It's a room where you're developing negatives or something. I forget how it all said that. But children have those too. And for our children, you know, early on, it might be there's a bear in the closet and it's a phobia. It's a fear that they have. As parents, we need to gently work with them through that. We need to show them that there is no bear. We need to open the door. We can turn the lights on. We can do some things a number of times to show them, okay, this is not for real. This is a dream or this is whatever. But then boundaries. Somewhere along the way, I think boundaries needs to step in and we need to say, okay, now you must go to sleep. There is no bear here. We're going to expect you to go to sleep. We're not going to come back in or whatever you want to put there. But whatever, we want to gently train them to overcome fears. Because someday God might want them to step into something that's much bigger than them. And they need to overcome their fear. Number 10, help them not to feel threatened by others. And I'm not sure how you do that. There are always going to be people in our children's lives that are better than them. In any aspect, there always will be. But we want to help them to not feel threatened by that, by that, to help them to understand the things that they are good at and affirm that in their minds. God loves them. God created them for special purposes. God values them, and we do too. And God has plans for them down the road. If a child lives with acceptance and friendship, he learns to find love in the world. That's our role as parents, to have a child live with acceptance and friendship, and then go on to find love, however that is, for that particular child. May God bless you, especially as younger parents, as you do the hard work. And it is hard work. Shall we pray?